I want to start by talking to you about your very earliest memories of fashion, because you're always the person who's reporting on fashion and interviewing people and talking to them. But I want to find out where your point, where you, fashion first sort of entered your consciousness was.
I think my grandmother used to get Life magazine when I was really young. And I think Life magazine was actually, the original Life magazine, was actually the way that a lot of people found out about the world. And it was so that it was so varied, all the stories they had. I remember stories about the factory, for example, like Warhol's factory, and pictures of Edie Sedgwick, and they're hopping around in tiny little mini dresses and being kooky. And I suppose that was probably, well, the very, very first fashion image I ever remember was Jean Shrimpton. This is really dating myself. She went to the races when she was in Melbourne, and she wore, I think, a Mary Quant smock dress. And no, it wasn't a smock, it was a A-line something right there, and it was about 3 inches above the knee. And Australia came shuddering to a standstill. People were shocked, horrified. She didn't have a hat on, and it was the races. And she was supposed to have a hat and a long dress, I guess. And that, I think that was, that would be my first memory of a fashion moment.
I'm interested that you mentioned the factory, because I've read before in interviews that you were obsessed with, like, Andy Warhol and this whole idea of the factory. Why was it? Was it the glamour, the sense of rebellion? What was it that sort of...
It was, you know, if I had a time machine, I would go to the factory in 1965 and 6. I don't know. I think it was just, I love the music. I love the art. I love the people. I love the sort of the freakiness of the of these people really appealed to me when I was growing up. They looked amazing in you know, those drag queens like Candy Darling and Jackie Curtis and Holly Woodlawn. I saw those movies, you know, when I was young, the Trash and Heat and Flesh. And it just looked like a scene you wanted to be a part of. I remember Lou Reed in an interview once said if he'd been reading about the factory and he couldn't get there, he would have killed himself, because it would just a bit dramatic. But I didn't quite feel like that. But I just knew it was a world I was destined to be a part of, and unfortunately I missed out on all of it. So, you know, it seemed incredibly kind of sexy and decadent, and, you know, everything that teenagers are drawn to at a certain time in their lives.
So how old were you when you went to university? You were 15,
15,
is that right?
Yeah.
What was that like? What was the effect of that?
Well, I looked quite old. I had a friend, I remember I said to her, well, my friends, of course, were much older than me. I mean, they were sort of university student age. And I remember I said to this woman I was hanging around with, well, how old do you think I am? She said, oh, about 26. I thought, oh, not only did she think I was older than I was, she thought I was a mature student, which was a bit of a shock. But the only problem was, because I was so young, everybody assumed I'd had all the experiences that they'd already had, which meant that it was quite hard. It was always hard for me to catch up, because if ever I wanted to have sex or take drugs or something, people would go, oh, you've done that. You don't need to do that again. I was, I haven't. Yeah. I'm ready, but, you know. It was a sort of the disconnect lasted for a long time.
I read an interview you did with another, and you said something which really struck me. You said that you've been doing this for so long and you've been sort of in the fashion circus, but relatively little is known about you. And I thought that was such a telling comment, because there is such a sort of circus, the fashion celebrity at the moment. But you have kind of kept or cultivated, I don't know which of the two, this degree of separation.
Well, I think what I probably meant at that point is that I actually hadn't really been interviewed before. You know, I've been doing interviews for years. I've been doing interviews for more than 20 years. And my approach to what I did was always that it was never about me. It was always about, you know, it was about who I was talking to. So I was very much, when I was doing, I did this show called Fashion File for a long time. And it was always about the designer, the model, the stylist, the hairdresser, whatever. And I thought I was the facilitator. And then it's funny, because as there's been this enormous boom of interest in fashion, it's kind of rolled out to everybody associated with fashion. And that show touched a lot of people. I mean, it was on all over the world, and I can go anywhere and there's people who remember it, talk about it, said that this is the way I found out about fashion. You know, in Russia, the editor of Russian Elle or something said to me that was the only connection we had with international fashion was Fashion File. And so it was important. Still, nobody, I was just whoever holding the microphone. And then I think when I said that, that was a little while ago, and that was really before, since then, I feel like I've done dozens of interviews, and I feel like I have no secrets anymore. But it wasn't a deliberate thing. It was just really much more wanting to communicate my interest in that world. And I wasn't important. It was the world that was important.
When you said it was never about me, you know, and it was always about sort of writing about what you were reporting on, which was fashion, in the way that if you were an art critic, you would write about the art, you wouldn't write about yourself as a person. Do you think that is something that has just completely changed? Because I think with things like the proliferation of street style blogs and just, as you mentioned, kind of just this boom that's happened in fashion, it is less about the fashion and it's more about the people.
I think it was always about the people. I just don't think there were the media that there are now to communicate every little wrinkle and wart of all those people. Now I think, you know, it's funny that just thinking about Bowie again, that when he was at his sort of Ziggy Stardust height, the only way you ever really saw images of him was in an NME or Melody Maker or something. There was no video or anything. So you would hear about these incredible performances, but there was absolutely no way that you could know what they looked like. And I think the rise first of video and then the internet is obviously, there's an enormous premium on being visual. And there are a lot more ways to you know, get that information out to the world. And I think that, you know, Warhol said, you know, the quote about everybody being famous in the future, everybody will be famous for 15 minutes. I mean, how prophetic. I mean, everybody is famous for, everybody's the star of their own show now. Mm-hmm. I mean, the internet has given everybody a voice of any opinion, any description. I mean, it's extraordinary. And fashion is kind of made, the fashion world is kind of made for that sort of exposure.
What makes a great fashion show?
You know, I couldn't. It's funny that it's something so intangible, because it's everything together. I would say, like the Joseph Altuzarra show in New York last season. The minute the music started, I just knew it was going to be an amazing show. And the music was, I think it was the soundtrack of Shame. And that music is very, you know,
very,
it makes your eyes well up to begin with. But then everything about that show, I mean, I was gaga about that show, the hair and the makeup, the clothing, the rhythm of the show from the first look to the last, the story that the collection told. But other people didn't feel that way. Mm. So for me, it really is just everything coming together. But then there are. I've been overwhelmed by spectacle. I mean, John Galliano did some, McQueen did some amazing things. And in the olden days, there were incredible Vivian Westwood shows, Jean-Paul Gaultier shows, Martin Sitbon. I mean, way back when. But then on the other hand, very, very rigorous, like a Helmut Lang show, which would just be bare bones, was just, you'd leave and you'd feel that your life had somehow been enriched by what had just happened to you. So I don't know, I couldn't say that there's a set of criteria because I would say the response is always the same. I just go, ooh, I don't cry, some people do.
I remember, never cried at a show?
No, I don't think so. I don't really cry at real things very often. But I remember like Jeffrey Bean shows, for example, all those older fashion critics, like in the days when Diana Vreeland was still going to fashion shows, they'd come out and they'd be in floods of tears. It was like they'd been to the ballet or the opera or something. And I've been really, really moved, and I've been thrilled. But I've never cried at a fashion show. Mm.
I want to talk a little bit, because I know that some of our viewers will be interested in this, is the process of you writing a review. Because I think it's something that, it's obviously a very individual thing, but when you leave a show, do you have like a little set of checkpoints that you do in your head? I've heard you talk about this in previous interviews, and I found it really interesting, and I'm quite intrigued.
Well, you know, we have to turn it around like that.
Exactly.
So it has to be that first impression. And then you do it, and it just has to go, and that's it. You don't get a chance to go back and change. So, yeah, I'm sitting there looking at something and thinking, I maybe overreact sometimes. But you've already got in your head what it is that that you're going to say in your 300 words.
So what are you looking for? What's kind of anything?
I'm looking for... I like a good story. It's not so much that I want to see something I've never seen before, because that's a very, very tall order. But I think designers now, or maybe always, but I think it's even more important now because there's so much more of everything. Consistency is important. Obviously, there are certain people you've been following them for years, and you're thinking about what you saw last time. And there are designers who will completely turn their back on what happened last time. There are designers who will evolve what happened last time. So you're looking for that. You know, you're looking for that thread. It's like the latest chapter in a book that you've been reading, a serial. And sometimes the book is a book that you love and you can't wait to see the next chapter. And sometimes the book is something you don't love, but you're still curious. And I think what's bizarre is that what's interesting and what's reassuring is that I never ever, people say this to me a lot. I mean, I must have seen countless thousands of fashion shows in the time I've been doing what I do. And they say, how do you not get bored? You know, how can you just go back every season and sit through another few hundred shows? And the thing is, it is new every time in that the idea of consistency, I mentioned it, but if I think about it, actually inconsistency is close to the truth, because there'll be a designer I absolutely love one season, the next season I don't like. So, you know, I don't like the collection particularly. So there's always surprise. I guess maybe I look to be surprised, and I look to be convinced, and I look to be spun a really good yarn.
Nice tenor phrase. Are you always honest?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not a slash and hack person. No. I'm true to myself. Is that honesty?
Can you do a bad review?
Well, yeah, I can. But like I said, I'm not a slash and hack kind of guy. So there might be a razor blade inside the marshmallow. Yeah, it's true that people get banned. People always get banned from shows, and that whole, you know, that weird front row thing, which I suppose it's like the court of Louis XIV or whatever. People love a hierarchy. People love a velvet rope. And you can, it's just always funny watching something which starts as a sort of democratic hodgepodge gradually being stratified into A-list, B-list, C-list, D-list, you know, like the rave scene, for example, it's human nature. Mm. I think it's funny. It's human nature to exclude. But yeah, it's always happened in fashion. If it's a problem, it's not a soluble problem, I don't think. I mean, fashion's full of people with very, very thin skins and fragile egos, and a lot of people looking to hurt and a lot of people looking to be hurt. Mm. And I mean, no more so than any other industry, I'm sure, but I think maybe it's just a little more it's a little more pointed, because fashion is supposed to be about beauty and dreams and so on. And so when the dreams become nightmares, I think it's, well, it's inevitable that that will happen. And I actually think it makes it all a lot more interesting. Mm.
Do you ever worry? I always wonder this when I read how many reviews you do each season and the pace of it. Do you ever worry that you'll wake up one day and it won't excite you anymore?
No. No, I think if that was going to happen, it would have happened a long, long time ago. I think I'm at a stage in my life where I'm really happy with what I do. I mean, I really love what I do. I love my job. And that's the kind of awareness I've come to after doing a lot of other things, you know, over the years, really a lot of weird things. I did so many different things. I mean, art directed animation once. I've worked in all sorts. I've worked in music and all sorts of other areas. And this is, I wouldn't say it's the most full. I wouldn't say it's necessarily that it's fulfilling, but it's really, really stimulating. You know, it's even when it is. Oh, you know, I'm sitting in a show. I'm like, oh my God, this is exactly like it was 10 years ago. It's still, there's always something. There'll be a new song that the DJ, that the guy who does the music plays, or there'll be a new model to kind of fixate on. I will never ever wake up in the morning and go, oh my God, I hate this about any bit of my life. Because like I said, the alternative is so much worse. And I imagine that the alternative, if I ever reached that point, then it would be the alternative that was imposing itself on me in some ghastly way.